Hey, tonight we're going to talk about forgiveness. And no real way to kind of hit the clutch and softly go into that. It's a big deal. Forgiveness is a really, really big deal. And some of us in the room tonight are wondering, I wonder if I will ever be at the place where I can forgive. Will I ever be able to move past, let go of what happened? Whatever that thing is. And then some of us are wondering, I wonder if I would ever be able to be forgiven. Right? I wonder if I'll ever see myself as God sees me. I wonder if my spouse will ever kind of get past, let me go of what it was that I did. How and could we even move forward? If you have your Bible tonight, we're just going to look at a passage in Matthew 19, or Matthew 18, I'm sorry. The parable of the unmerciful servant. Matthew 18, verse 21. If you're there, it's famous. It's my favorite passage on forgiveness, and I can't think about forgiveness without starting here. So in verse 21, we'll just read through and make a few observations. So in verse 21, Peter came to Jesus and asked, "Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sinned against me? Up to seven times?" And Jesus answered, "I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times. And so if you're familiar with this passage, if you've heard it preached before, generally pastors will go on this long-winded diatribe that is important. It's not the sole focus of this text. But in Jewish kind of law and tradition, you were really expected to forgive somebody three times, right? So the whole three strikes you're out may have come. I don't know the meaning or that phrase or where it came from, but very possibly from this idea. And so, you know, it was reasonable to expect you to forgive somebody once, a second time, and then, you know, a third time if they just, you know, golly, just one last slip up. But after that, I mean, come on. I mean, now there's a willfulness to it, and we've established a pattern, and you are off the hook after that. Okay, that's how they all of it understood. And so Jesus is kind of going, "Hey, man, I'll 2x that. What about, you know, could we? What do you think about seven times?" You know, and he's like looking around his buddies, "Hey, what do you think about that?" And Jesus said, "That's not even close, right?" And he's saying, "Hey, it's not the number; it's the posture of unlimited forgiveness." And so Peter asked the how many question, and Jesus answered that. I mean, he's a respectful teacher. You ask a question from a pretty good place, he'll answer it. But it's really interesting because now he goes on, and for another 12 verses, he talks about forgiveness. Right? He answers Peter's question kind of in one verse, and then he says, "But here really is the heart of forgiveness." And I think it's where we need to focus on tonight. It's not the how many, and it's not the how. Although I think both of those are really important questions. We'll talk a little bit about the how tonight. But really, the question is why. Why do we forgive? And that is what Jesus is most concerned about in this passage. And that's what I want to focus in on tonight. Okay, so he said 70, not seven times, but 70 77 times, or 7 times 70, and 23. Jesus keeps talking. He says, "Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. And as he began the settlement, a man who owed him 1,000 bags of gold, or 1,000, or 10,000 talents, 10,000 bags of gold, 10,000 talents, was brought to him. And since he was not able to repay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children, all that he had, be sold to repay the debt." And so if you're sitting there, you know, in the first century, and you're hearing this story, you're standing next to Peter and Jesus in the crowd, what you just heard was an absolutely staggering sum. And it was really kind of like hyperbole, that number, 10,000 talents. It would be, I could show you the math, but it's probably like about $6 billion. Right? So you start, you know, it's a good way to start a joke. So there once was a guy who owed $6 billion, you know? And that's kind of how it starts, and everybody immediately knows, oh no. Because when you owe money and you can't pay, they take it out on you and your family. And this guy is in serious trouble. And $6 billion is a number that nobody could repay. It's hard for us. Sometimes we see big numbers and we go, well, you know, we live in the age of stock options and commercial real estate and Bernie Madoff, you know. There's ways to make $6 billion bucks if your life depended on it now. But there's no way. There's no way. And so everyone in the crowd is going, this guy is toast, man. The master said, sell everything this guy has. Sell his wife and his kids. He'll be in prison for the rest of his life. He's sunk. And so, verse 26, the servant falls to his knees before this king. He is the highest law in the land. There's no one else to appeal to but the king. And he says, be patient with me. Please be patient, he begged. And I will pay back everything. Which is, no possible way. But if you're about to go to prison for the rest of your life, you'll say anything. And so that's what he said. Hey, I'll pay it all back. And the servant's master took pity on him and canceled the debt and let him go. And so you can imagine, if you're listening in on that, just the sense of relief you have for this guy. Here was a guy, it was completely over. Completely over for him. He had lost his family, and for the rest of his life he'd be separated from them and in prison or whatever, or anything worse that the king wanted to do. It was over for this guy. And here he is, 10 seconds later, he walks out of the king's presence with no debt whatsoever. He's completely in one sentence, he's completely let go of all the debt that he owed, and he walks out of there an absolutely free man. Can you imagine what that would have felt like? I was trying to think, like, the biggest debts that most of us owe are our houses. A lot of times for those of us with homes and loans. And I was thinking it would be just like, you know, I called the home loan modification hotline. If you guys get pounded with those in the mail, you know, everyone's going to, lower my payments to $50 a month or something, you know, some magical way that, or the government's going to help me out and pay my mortgage and call this number, right? So let's say I did call one of those and I get, you know, somebody in a foreign country with an accent, and they can't pronounce my last name, and they look up my account, and I say, you know, I was kind of hoping maybe we could lower some of the payments on here. I want to pay you guys back, but we're just kind of struggling a little bit. Could you see what you can do? And I hear the on the keyboard, and she kind of goes, She goes, tell you what, got a good deal. I looked at your record. You still owe a lot on your house. We're just going to cancel this whole thing. The whole thing? The whole thing. Have a nice day. Can you imagine? I'm holding the receiver just completely dumbfounded, you know? Did that just happen? You know, is this going to come back to bite me later? Did she really just say my loan was completely wiped off? And I can imagine hanging up and calling my wife. You're not going to believe this. The kids get to go to college now. It's going to be awesome. We're completely let go of our debt. Can you even imagine what that would have felt like? And yet this is exponentially more so. The guy's life was at stake, not mortgage payments for another 30 years. This was this dude's life. And so he goes skipping out of there. I don't know if he skipped, but you got to know when you went from certain death and separation from your family to a free man in 10 seconds, it's got to feel good. I'm guessing. And then verse 28. So this guy, when this servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins or 100 denarii, and he grabbed him, and check this out, he begins to choke him, and he says, pay back what you owe me. And his fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, please be patient with me, I will pay it back. Sound familiar? Right? And so, I mean, even if you didn't, you know, study literary forms in college, you've picked this thing up, right? Here is the same situation 5 minutes later. Except we're talking about a much smaller debt. You know, it'd be hard to kind of quantify that, but probably if you were a day laborer, we're talking about a third of a year's wage, okay? So whatever a third of whatever it is that you make, your friend owes that to you, maybe probably want to collect on that deal, I'm guessing. And so he walks out of the king's presence, a completely free man. He sees his friend that he's loaned a third. It might be why this guy was in such bad debt. He's got he's loaning out all his money to those folks. I never thought about that before. But he's loaned this money out, and he wants it back, and he begins to choke his fellow servants. They're fellow servants. They're peers. And he puts his hands around his neck and is shaking him and saying, "You must pay this back. You will pay this back." And so the question is, what's this servant? What's this servant going to do? I mean, it's an amazing story. He's been forgiven $6 billion, and now here he is, you know, $5, $10, $15, $20,000, $25,000, whatever it is. In verse 30, "But he refused. Instead, he went off and had this man, his friend, his fellow servant, thrown into prison until he could repay the debt," which is to say, he wouldn't be able to repay it. This was totally fine. That's what you did if someone didn't pay back the debt that you were owed. This was your recourse. And he decided he was going to execute justice on his fellow servant. And he said, as he chokes him, "I'm going to send you off. You'll be separated from your family, and you'll spend the rest of your life in prison or until you can pay me back." 10 minutes after, he's been completely set free. So now, as you're listening into the story and you can hear, you know, kind of the crowd, I don't know about you, but I'm just, you know, indignant when I see this and I hear about this guy's just demand for payment. In verse 31, everyone else is frustrated too, because in 31, when the other servants heard what had happened, they were outraged, absolutely outraged, and they went back to the king and told him everything that had happened. So they went back to the same king who had just wiped out $6 billion worth of debt. And 32, the master called the servant in. And instead of, you know, here he was, this is someone he just pardoned and he was in right standing with. He says, "You wicked servant, I've canceled all the debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you?" And in anger, he handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he could pay back all that he owed. And in verse 35, "And this is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother or sister from your heart." And so if we had just the second half of that story, servant to servant, I think if we came to that story, we'd go, "Golly, what's this guy going to do? And if he did choose to forgive the debt, like how could he do that? How could he absorb that loss? And should he even? Like, I don't even know if the guy should forgive a third of the year's wages." And we'd be a little bit perplexed. But since we have the whole story, we're left asking not should he or how could he. We're all asking, how could he not? How could he not forgive this debt? It's the obvious question. It's the obvious question. How could he not forgive? And then we understand real quickly, that's us, right? You see that, right? We are the unmerciful servant. We are the ones who have been forgiven a debt before God, which is so big that there is no way we could pay it, right? We deserve judgment and separation forever from God. And God said, "I'm going to pay that price. I'm going to forgive it, but the way I'm going to do it is I'm going to cause my son to be tortured and beaten and die for you to pay that penalty that you owe me. You owe me, you get off scot-free." And then, since we're the unmerciful servant, we have the audacity to go to our spouse, metaphorically speaking, right? Put our hands around the neck and say, "You will repay me. You will make this right. I will not let you off the hook for this one. You owe me. And I will extract justice in however ways I see fit. But you owe me." And the the question is, how could we do that? Not how could we forgive our spouse for whatever horrible things they've done. The question in the text is how could we not? And how could we not? It's a good question. And it's one I think that for many of us is really going to be the tipping point in where we go from here. And a lot of us can go through re-engage for the next however many more weeks we have and not deal with this forgiveness issue, and we are just going to be spinning our wheels. We won't really have dealt with the issue, and we will fix nothing, but we will have completed a 16-lesson program and somehow feel better about ourselves, but we haven't dealt with a forgiveness issue, and we will not experience the oneness that God had. Okay? So what is forgiveness? Oftentimes, the Bible uses it in financial terms. It is to kind of send something away. The Greek word is aphemi. And so it is to send or just push something away. So here's a debt that you owe. I'm just going to send it away. Right? It's not even going to be before us. It's not going to be between us. It's not something I'm going to call into collection. I'm just going to let it go. I'm going to send it away. And so you don't hold it over their head. You don't extract justice or repayment. So that's what it is. And this is where generally we get really tripped up. But what about, or how about, or what ifs? And so just five things that forgiveness isn't, okay, that I think will be helpful. And this really is a lot of the forgiveness lesson. But number one, that's in your book. But number one, it's not letting them off the hook, okay? And I would just say that sometimes it's going to be the most loving thing you can do is to let them experience the natural consequences of their sin. Okay, you're not looking for retribution. You're not looking to extract justice. But there may be consequences for whatever it is that you or your spouse have done. And sometimes it's just best just to let some of those consequences come. Not with a vengeful attitude, not with retribution. But it's not completely letting them off the hook. Second thing is it's not an instant conferral of trust. And trust is generally granted over time, right? You don't want to be unwise. Just because I forgive you doesn't mean that I completely trust you. And there's probably going to be a track record or some time or some just different behavioral patterns that I need to observe so that I can fully trust you. Now, my posture is I want to trust you, and I'm going to work really hard to look for ways to trust you, not for ways that I shouldn't, okay? But it doesn't mean that you trust them. And you can forgive someone and still not trust them. Okay? So guys, man, you know, if they know your wife by name at Neiman Marcus and she's run up, you know, every credit card you have, forgiveness doesn't mean opening up a new account and saying, baby, I forgive you. Okay? I wouldn't do that. I don't know that would be wise. And same thing, you know, wives, if your husband confesses, a pornography addiction, I wouldn't just say, I trust you, have at it. I'll be gone for a week, the computer's plugged in, I trust you. You know, I would look for ways to install covenant eyes and look for ways to rebuild trust, okay? Trust may not be granted right away, okay? Number three. Forgiveness is not forgetting, okay? Forgetting is not a sign of godliness. It's a sign of brain damage, right? You probably won't forget some of the pain. And now it'll dissipate over time, but you won't forget it. And so people will just say, I can't forgive him because I can't forget. Well, those somehow aren't mutually exclusive. You can have forgiveness and not have them, and not have forgotten everything that's gone on. Okay, number four, and this is a big one. It's not a feeling. Right? It's not a feeling. We don't wait until we feel like it to forgive. Instead, we are commanded. We're commanded to forgive. Colossians 3:13 says, "We are to forgive as Christ has forgiven us." That's the nature of our forgiveness. That's the why. That's the why, which then becomes the how. But since Christ has forgiven us, now I can extend Forgive us, but we don't wait for it, right? It's really funny. Our kids, like, you know, when they, Pam was really good about making our kids ask for forgiveness from their siblings, and they'll go in there and they'll, you know, break their toy or whatever, and just, I'm sorry, you know, as a drive-by doesn't cut it at our house. Pam makes them, you know, look them in the eye and ask for forgiveness, and a lot of times they'll say, you know, one of them, the offending party will look at the offended and say, you know, I'm sorry I did this. Will you please forgive me? And I've heard my kids on multiple occasions say, no. No. And what they're saying is, I am mad. And I don't feel like it right now. And so they, you know, they generally come around. You take away things like allowance and food, things like that. They normally come around. But we don't let them off the hook. And we'll say, okay, you know what? But we're not going to let this go by. You can take a few minutes, but whether you feel like it or not, your brother and sister has asked you to forgive them, and they'll make right whatever it is. But you owe them. You've got no basis to withhold forgiveness because of the way you've been forgiven. And so some of the feelings, a lot of times we'll say, "Well, I forgive, and I still feel these things." And I will tell you that the more you rehearse the forgiveness and your kind love and intention for this person, those emotions will dissipate over time. And one of my favorite stories about this is a gal named Corrie Ten Boom, and she and her family lived in Holland during World War II, and they were kind of sheltering Jews so that they wouldn't be sent off to concentration camps. And something else had happened in her life, and she had forgiven somebody, but she just kept feeling like these feelings and these emotions just kept coming back over and over and over again. And she was talking to a pastor and said, "Why is this? Like, I don't want to feel this way, and I'm trying to forgive." And the pastor looked out. There was a window there, and there were church bells that were clanging there through the window, which make an absolute ton of noise. And he said, "Corrie, it's just like those church bells. If you continue to pull on the rope, they will continue to make noise, reverberate in your heart. But the second you let go and the second you stop rehearsing, going back over, trying to be angry again, they will begin to dissipate. That noise, that reverberation, some of the pain and some of the just some of the emotions that come will begin to dissipate over time." And that's the way forgiveness works. We forgive our spouses and each other, but oftentimes we're going to have to remind ourselves, "Yeah, I did forgive them. I did let them off because I'm getting really, really angry right now. And I can pull on these church bells until I'm all ginned back up again and I feel all kinds of hatred or anger or resentment. Or I can let it go. I can remember that I'm supposed to forgive the way Christ has forgiven me, and I can begin to let it go." Okay? And then lastly, forgiveness in some ways isn't even about the other person. Fundamentally, it's about you and God. It's about you honoring God, the command there. It's about you understanding your forgiveness and about being obedient to Him. And really, it is a gift. Check this out, guys. Forgiveness is a gift that we give ourselves, right? The most miserable people on this planet are people that have not forgiven. And in their misery, in their anger, and their resentment, they are trying to somehow make the other person feel bad, and it does not work. Dennis Wineman said tonight, it's like drinking the poison, hoping that your spouse gets sick. It doesn't work. Do yourself a favor and forgive. I know it's hard. I know it's hard. But fundamentally, this is going to help you out a ton. It is going to help your relationship with God, and absolutely with your spouse. It is a gift you give your spouse. Okay. So through the years, I've been amazed at how sometimes I've asked people, "Hey, just go home and ask your wife to forgive him, forgive you, or go back, you know, to your husband, ask him to forgive you." And I just kind of get blank stares, like, how do you do that, right? I've never been modeled, never seen it. So I asked Pam to come up and just kind of, we'll just demonstrate. So this is like no paid actors here, definitely not. But we just wanted to show you just kind of what it looks like. And so we don't have any big crazy things to confess to you, but just transactionally, you know, what does it look like to ask and grant, and even just kind of have some of that conversation? You'll see it's really not that scary. So do you have any thoughts before we go?
Yeah, and then it just may not look this kind of clean and
sanitized.
And sanitized.
Yeah. You're not going to cuss. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Not here, at least.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead. What were you saying? I told Pam, I said, I want you to come up and I'll confess something. You know, we'll re-roll the tape and I'll remember. And she goes, well, you know what? I'll go. So I didn't coerce my wife to come up here and confess in front of you. I was going to go. And she said, hey, I'll go. So I said, hey, sure. Yeah. So knock it out.
Yeah, this is fairly recent in the last month or two, recent months, that we've just kind of worked through this. So, you know, John, on the just on the finances thing and just, us kind of talking about expectations there and just things kind of as a team we can do. I had told you that I would kind of do certain things as far as with the budget day to day, kind of helping with some of the side income we're trying to make, and have done some of that, but I know some of that I've dropped the ball, and so will you forgive me for telling you I would do something and just basically not doing it?
Yeah, yeah, and so probably I think a good way there is like to pause and say, hey, I want to ask your forgiveness, but give the other person just a chance, just to say, I want your forgiveness, and I'd feel absolutely the freedom there just to say, I just want you to know this, and say something like, man, this is something we agreed on, it's important to me, and so it's really important to me that we get this done, but yes, absolutely, I do forgive you.
Yeah. Yeah, so thank you for that, and just would love to hear just anything else that, that maybe I've done to hurt you or offend you or just not followed through on that maybe I'm not aware of.
Yeah, no, that really is that's it. So you can talk about just kind of exploring for more kind of other things. A lot of times we'll ask for forgiveness, and really your spouse will be, there'd be something else. Really, they were kind of hoping, you said, I need to ask for forgiveness, and they go, finally. And then you ask for forgiveness, like, oh, that's not even the thing, man. I was hoping, And so just to give them an opportunity. No, there really is nothing else there. So, yeah.
Yeah, and so with that, just, there's more conversations, and there's, and so I'll just tell you with that, and so just the gift you can give to your spouse. So, John, just say, hey, what is it that I can help you, not drop the ball again? Is there something I can do, because we're a team, that I can do to help you kind of in some of these areas?
Yeah, and then, which Pam did, just say,
establish his trust.
Yeah, and Pam was saying, okay, I'm on it. Here's what I'm going to do, right? So I didn't just say into a black hole, just kind of cast forgiveness that I'm going to have to come back to next week and the week after that and the week after that. She said, hey, here's what I'll do. And I said, great. And it took all of 5 minutes. It was something that I was actually pretty frustrated about. And Pam just kind of humbled herself and said, man, I wasn't at my best, which is what we try to do with each other in real time, rather than letting things build up. We try to keep the debt small, and it didn't. It wasn't painful, and so I didn't walk around the house for the next day reminding her of how she failed, and Pam didn't walk around for the next week just going, I wonder if you really meant it. I wonder if you really trust me. I wonder. I wonder. I wonder. I wonder. We're good. We're good. Okay. Now, there's some things that become harder, and there might be a little. I mean, that took all of 2 minutes. Some of the stuff that's going on will take a little bit longer, and I understand that. But that fundamentally, that's it. Here's what I've done. I'm wrong. Will you forgive me? And because I've been forgiven everything. Okay, well, that was an offense. I mean, that was frustrating to me. But not like living a life in rebellion to God, living for me. It wasn't that big a deal. So absolutely, I'll extend forgiveness. Okay. And so a lot of us have said, well, why do I need to do all this whole forgiveness and confession anyway, right? And I will tell you, I think this is really, for some of us, it's going to be the bridge towards oneness and intimacy. Intimacy is being fully known and fully accepted. And so if you haven't confessed and you haven't asked forgiveness, you're not really fully known. And so you might be getting along. Things might be okay in your home. But because you haven't confessed, what you've settled for is this kind of facade of intimacy. And tonight, you can begin to kind of trade it in for something that's real. You can trade in the fake intimacy for, here's who I truly am, 100% completely. And will you accept me? Will you forgive me? Will you still be married to me? And when that's going on, there's real oneness and intimacy, right? Which is the way God relates to us, right? We've been fully found out. We are more wretched than we even thought we were, and we're more accepted than we even could dream to be, right? We're way more accepted than we even could hope we would ever be. And that's the gospel to us, and that's what we get to extend to our spouse. And some of you guys are doing a great job, to be honest. Some of you guys got some ground to take, and some of you guys are doing awesome at this. I've heard there's a lot of stuff going on in our groups right now, and I've heard some stories. And I'll just tell you, just heard a story this week of somebody that had confessed to their spouse some pretty big stuff, and the spouse's response at the end was, "Thank you, and we're gonna be old together." And I thought, man, I'm honored to be on the same team. When somebody will release someone and recommit in the midst of pain and say, I'm not going anywhere, man. Somebody's going to be pushing somebody in a wheelchair here. And I look forward to it. And so that is ultimately where this thing could take us if we'll do a good job of forgiveness. Okay? So, Pam, you want to pray us out? And then, Susan, you want to send us announcements, tell us what we need to know? Mm.
Dear Father, thank you for reminding us of the unthinkable debt that you have forgiven each of us of. And I just pray that we would be ever reminded and grateful of that. And when we are tempted to not extend that to our spouse or to others, that we would just be reminded of who are we not to, and then just be grateful that you have extended us that freedom. And we just pray for these couples that are here. Thank you for their commitment just to be here, to work on their marriage, and just however hard or good place they're in, just to glorify you in that. And we just pray for specifically couples that are just going to be seeking forgiveness from each other, that they would just look to you and your example for that, and just bless that authenticity and just that work that they're putting into their marriages. Just thank you for this place and this body, for your word and your people. In Jesus' name, amen.